Great, good. So we'll begin. So welcome to this seminar, free seminar. We're here for 75 minutes looking at this topic of the landscapes of grief, and I'll say more about the kind of the subtopics of all that in a minute. But I want to start with a bit of just quiet time arriving in our self-led and focusing way. Now, if you're new to focusing, I'll explain that in a minute too. But I'm going to lead us into just a minute or two just arriving in ourselves, just so we can begin to be a bit more present, be a bit more present to ourselves, to each other. So all you need to do is be comfortable. So you can have your eyes open and eyes closed. And I'll end with a quote by Frances Weller, who I'll say more about later. But yeah, for now, just noticing, inviting you to notice your, just a physical sense of your body, like just your weight and your shape, your the kind of texture of whatever you're sitting on. So beginning to get a sense of that, having a body. Often computers and being in front of the screens pull us into our head, don't they? And that's fine. But if you can, just letting your awareness broaden to include something of your body. And that might be just through the touch of whatever you're sitting on, your clothes. Different parts of your body, so sensing the lower half, your legs and your feet, perhaps your feet are touching the floor, wherever they are, just noticing those. And then inviting you to sense the upper body too, the pelvis up to into the torso, the belly, your chest. Heart and throat. Noticing your shoulders and arms and hands. And your neck, your head, your face. So sensing your whole body as best as you can. And don't worry if you're finding it hard. No, it's not a problem at all. Just noticing how you are. And you might notice, the kind of flavor of your thoughts and feelings right now. Maybe there's something that's kind of from the day that's calling attention, or maybe there's some trepidation even about being here. And whatever's there is welcome, whatever is there. Even if you feel numb, that's welcome too. So I'll just leave half a minute of silence for you to be curious. Okay, bringing that to a close. And taking in the words from Frances Weller. Let me just find it. So this is from his book, The Wild Edge of Sorrow. Grief is subversive, undermining the quiet agreement to behave and be in control of our emotions. It is an act of protest that declares our refusal to live numb and small. There is something feral about grief, something essential outside the ordained and sanctioned behaviours of our culture. Because of that, grief is necessary to the vitality of the soul. Contrary to our fears, grief is suffused with life force. It is not a state of deadness or emotional flatness. Grief is alive, wild, untamed, and cannot be domesticated. It resists the demands to remain passive and still. We move in jangled, unsettled, and riotous ways when grief takes hold of us. It is truly an emotion that arises from the soul. Yes. Great. So welcome to people who've just arrived in the last moments. So I'll say a little bit about me and a bit about the overview of this evening, and we'll go straight in. So yeah, I teach a practice called focusing. I don't know, is anyone new to focusing? Maybe wave or indicate. A couple of people. Three, someone else, maybe. So a few years. Okay, it doesn't matter. But I'll give it like a little brief flavor of it. But you know, very simply, you could say it's listening to the body, what the body knows. And I suppose I've noticed in the process of doing that over the last 15 years that what shows up a lot, one of the big things that shows up is grief in myself and in other people. You know, when we turn our attention to what, if you're what the body feels and knows, so often it's unresolved or unmet grief. You know, there's other things too, but that's one of the big patterns, really. And that's kind of one of the things that led me to here, to this kind of developing this work. So focusing is a practice of listening to your body. Let's call it that. Listen to what the body knows. You can do it as a sort of solo practice on your own, kind of even just informally, just a moment like we did then. How am I right now? You know. But or just more of a kind of formal thing, really tuning in to the what that's the kind of what's called the felt sense in the body, the way our body feels things. And you can do it as a paired practice. It's a really beautiful paired practice where it's very equal, and you take equal time, and you really listen with your empathic awareness to somebody else in their process. Very lovely. Yeah, so that's kind of, I mean, just. Seminars is about talking about that and about this and about grief and about those topics coming together. So we'll be exploring something about our relationship to grief. We'll be talking about this topic. What does the body know? I talk about the body knowing something, so I want to talk a bit more about that, what it knows. And we'll look at the five gates of grief, which come from this book, Wild Edge of Sorrow, The Reflections. Okay. So amazing teaching from Francis Weller. So we'll look at that. And look at something about community grief processes, how grief needs a container. So I'm just pausing temporarily because people are registering for the seminar, and I'm just going to check that everyone's getting something. Okay, this should be all right. Good. And I'll be inviting your input just through chat or through speaking, whatever. You don't have to say anything or even be seen, but if you want to take part by speaking, that's very welcome, very completely fine. So I had this idea for a question to begin, and then I would change it. So my first idea was, what's your relationship to grief? What's your relationship to grief? So it's a question, but I'm going to change it. I'm going to decide. I think it might be maybe as interesting to ask. Like, what was your family's relationship to grief, or your broader culture? Because I'm not assuming everyone's from the same kind of background as me, but what's your family or cultural relationship to grief? Is it something that's welcomed? Is it something that's not? Is it something you speak about? Is it? So that's a general question, and I'd love responses, really, just to kind of, like, one word. You can just do a one-word chat, focus on a chat or speak. Also, we haven't got time for everyone to be heard, but just want to get a snapshot, really, of that, the answer to that question. What's your... Does that question make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, great. Good. So, yes, whoever wants to share, please do.
Hello.
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 Yeah, yes, carry on speaking, that's fine.
I'm quite new to this, so you'll have to excuse me. It's the first time I've done anything like this.
Oh, no, no problem. Welcome, welcome.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Well, I'm just, in my family, it wasn't welcome.
Yeah.
I mean, any kind of feeling in my family wasn't welcome. Mm. Any anger, nothing, and certainly not sadness.
Yeah.
So no, it wasn't welcome because it was too uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, far too uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think that's right. That's right. Yeah. It's one of the many feelings that are unwelcome, but maybe especially. But yes, yeah. And
it's fearful, isn't it? It's fear.
Yeah, that's part of what we're looking at tonight.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So someone's typed in stiff upper lip. That's a kind of that's a stereotype, isn't it, of British male culture, stiff upper lip. But it has something to it, right? It's not completely nonsense.
No, but we've got it as well. The females have got it too.
Right, yeah. It's not just me. Stereotyping, yeah. So anyone else want to share through chat or also other kinds of things? Yeah, don't talk much about it and very rarely display it. So even if one talks about it, it might be kind of removed. So someone else. So I'm assuming if there's just a little moment here, assuming if it says everyone on the chat, that means you're happy for me. Well, anyway, everyone can see it. So everyone can see who's saying it. If you want it to be private, please just chat it to me and I won't say who it is, and you can read it and I'll be referring to it. Warm attention to the people to the moment says hardly ever talked about anymore. Yeah, that's right. So there can be a moment, and I'll come to this, you know, where it kind of just forces itself into our life through the loss of a loved one, and people, you know, can be very tender sometimes and completely open up, but very often it goes back underground very quickly. Certainly that's been the case in my family. It might be welcome for a moment because it has to be, right? Somebody's died or something. It's moved over, moved on, exactly. It's pre-written when someone passes on. I'm not sure if I'm currently connected with this. Yeah. I would be curious to hear more about that. Or you can type it too. It was a learning experience. We learned what to do only when we had a bereavement. Yeah, so that's right. It's also something that we probably don't have much practice at. It comes at us, doesn't it, as a surprise. Anything more? People, please feel free to speak, also chat. Maybe someone here had a family where it was welcomed. That's also occasionally happens, but... Oh, sorry, Mrs. Yeah, okay, Bruno. Yeah.
The words that come to my mind, it's Kirsty here.
Yeah, I can see.
Just sort of like, don't go there. Just don't go there.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Right.
Okay. And an image of just a big shut gate. Like it's not territory that you would go into.
yeah. Don't go there. That's the message. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And just someone asking, is a recording shared publicly? Yeah, it will be. But if you don't want to be on, if you're saying something and don't want to be on the recording, then I can edit your work. It'll only be the audio for start. It's good to know that, just the audio. If you say something and don't want to be on it, let me know afterwards. I can take that bit out. Yeah, someone else, yes, I didn't see mum and dad experience it. Yeah, I could echo with that. I didn't see much of it. We don't see much of it. It's hard to learn how to be with it, right? Or what it is, even. There's a message. A message of grief is part of life, yet don't stay too long with it. That's right. So yeah, it can be welcomed. It can be welcomed for a bit, and then it's like, okay, now get on with it. Yeah. Thank you. I mean, that gives us a flavour, doesn't it? I mean, our own relationship with it will be inevitably informed by those around us. What their how is welcomed? If something isn't welcomed in our life, then how can we welcome it in ourselves? Someone's saying how to deal with the feeling. Yeah, it's an unknown territory in my family. Yeah, I mean, it's so unusual. We're just not very good at dealing with feelings. Yeah. Someone just joined us. So yeah. I'm going to show you a picture. Share an image search, because when I was looking for this picture for this seminar, I thought, what will picture do? And I thought, I'd just type in grief as an image search in Google. So I thought I'd share that. I think you should be able to see it if you should be able to hear me while I'm sharing it. So give me a moment to share it. Share, where's it gone? There. Okay, can you see that? Nod someone. Yeah, there we go. So look at all these images. Like nearly all of these images are someone on their own. I'm just scrolling. Can you see it scrolling down? Great. I don't see anybody. Oh, yeah, look, somebody. Oh, that's no, actually somebody with somebody missing. Look, see, look. Every image is someone on their own. So we're going to come back to this. Oh, there's somebody there. No, look, there's two people. A rare. Mostly it's a solo thing. And so this is, I just find all that interesting. Yeah. So anyway, just to show you that. If it seemed as something that you deal with alone. And then this was a big revelation from this book that it isn't, not at all. It was never meant to be like that. Let's put it in that language.
Is it okay to speak? I'm not sure how to ask.
Oh yeah, please ask a question, type it or ask it. Yeah, please ask now, but also I'll have places where I'm open for questions because I'm sort of also got things to say, but please ask now and then,
I don't know if it's quite right because it's not really about my family, but what I'm aware is that I thought that I was quite good with feeling grief, but I've become aware recently that I feel like I'm doing a bit of a spiritual bypass.
Mm-hmm.
So basically through having a spiritual belief, I am avoiding experiencing the death of something.
Mm. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'd be interested in your comments on
Let's see if it gets answered in the call, and if it doesn't, can you bring it back at the end? Is that all right? Because it's an important one. And but yeah, exactly. No, I really recognize that in myself. I could say that to just, you know, just I spend a lot of time being spiritual, i.e. not having my experience, not really being willing to touch into what was painful, basically. So there's a few more, some more chat things coming through. So yeah, well, Stephen will come back. I think we might touch on that in the five gates of grief, different kinds of griefs that we feel. So yeah, definitely represent kind of stuck places in our collective life. Yeah. Just going to pause because rather. Interestingly, my wife wants to join the call and she hasn't got the Zoom link, so I'm just going to send her that. Pause for a moment. Oops, someone's gone.
I don't know if I can say anything here. Is that okay?
I want to go on to the next bit. Can you decide to pause?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, thanks, yeah. So I lost my track. Okay, so here's the next question. So a collective inquiry again, and please feel free to chat and feel free to speak. So what is it that makes it hard to connect to it? So that's the, for you, in your experience, what, why is it, might be, I mean, aside from what we've mentioned, our cultural kind of family situation, but yeah, maybe just taking a moment, like, what might make it hard for you to connect with it? And let's see what comes.
Well, to be honest, what's happening with me now is I'm not finding it hard at all.
Right, yeah.
Because I'm bloody crying every day.
Yeah, well, okay, there we go.
Yeah, I'm crying every day. It's driving me insane.
Okay, the opposite problem. Yeah.
So I'm not finding it. I'm finding it difficult to turn it off. It's like a tap.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No,
that's my experience anyway. Yeah, recently.
That's right. Sometimes it flows very readily, and we might think there's something wrong with us, right? I remember reading a book by a teacher called Martin Prechtel, and he talked about crying for 3 days nonstop, and I was like, oh wow.
Yeah.
I want to do that.
Well, I tell you, when I got sober, I've been sober 20 years now, and my second year of sobriety, I cried for a year, an actual year, and it's coming back again now. I'm crying daily now.
Yeah. Okay.
So, you know.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it can gladly flow. Yeah. So I have a few other answers here. Fear of being overwhelmed by it. Yeah.
Well, yeah, a bit, but you know, it's how it goes, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm seeing just the other comments here that are coming through, Tina. Yeah, so it's like exactly. Some people, it's fear of accepting it, fear of being overwhelmed by it. Wanting to feel safe and have it witnessed. Yeah, exactly. That's also important. It's not something that, it needs something. We'll come back to this. It needs something. Yeah. Any other kind of?
I just want to say, Peter, a little bit of laryngitis, so hopefully we can get this out.
But they're welcome.
Is that there are different? I mean, I'm sure you're aware of this. There are different kinds of grief. This is grief when we lose somebody, but then there are also it's grief when we lose parts of ourselves or friends that aren't dead. And my sense is that different kinds of grief are felt and dealt with differently.
Mm-hmm.
Some might be easier to deal with, like unfortunately losing somebody is more culturally acceptable to grieve.
Yeah.
Whereas I've had a broken arm that's been a problem not getting better, and that feels like losing a part of myself, and there's shame that comes with that, and all feelings about aging and blah blah blah, which is not so culturally acceptable to talk about. And so
thank you for adding that in. Exactly. So there are more culturally acceptable griefs, and they might be easier to welcome, but then there's other ones like what you've spoken about that people may not get, or
not even that are just hard. And I've been focusing for 26 years, but that are hard for maybe us to even be with, even somebody who's used to.
That's right. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm just going to read some of the comments, so just give us some catch up on those. Not being able to recognize it, feeling merged with the feeling of it. Exactly. It's overwhelming. Hard to connect to grief as ask for accepting things I resist. Don't want to accept. Belittling or judging. So many different things. So this is why I want us to start a little bit with kind of what stops us from connecting. Well, not start, but this next piece. Just what is it that stops us from connecting with it? And I want to share a kind of tool from focusing that I found really helpful. And I'm just sharing like the kind of pith of it at the moment, but hopefully it'll make sense. I'm gonna say something to you. So say two sentences to you, and I'm gonna invite you to just feel the difference in them. Almost like you might even say them to yourself and notice the difference. So I'm gonna invite you to say something in two different ways and just feel the difference and see if it, and that'll see how that feels. So the two sentences, the first one goes, I feel scared. You could even, I feel scared of being sad or something. I feel scared. And kind of just taking the feel of that in. You maybe even sense a kind of quality in your body or a quality of that, even though you may not have it right now, just the feel of it. And then say it this way. Something in me feels scared. Something in me feels scared. or something in me feels scared of feeling sad or something. So noticing the difference between those two, if you can sense a difference.
Definitely a difference.
Yeah, please share. What did you notice?
Well, the second one is much easier to handle.
Right, yeah, okay.
Because it's not so personal, is it? When you say it's me that's feeling it, but when you say something else is feeling it, that's much easier to handle. Because it is actually something else that's feeling it, because, well, maybe it is. Hang on a minute. Maybe it's not. But that seems to be an easier way of dealing with it.
I mean, there's lots I could say about that, what you said there. Sometimes it is a part of us and sometimes it isn't. But certainly you noticed it was easier when you said it the second way. Great.
Yeah.
Anyone else notice something similar?
Yeah. Hello?
Hi again. Hi, Diana. Yeah.
Hi. Yeah, I kind of felt the first one feels like it's every part of you. And it's kind of quite overwhelming. But the second part allows room for other things to be there too.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. So it kind of feels like it's a bit of you, not, there's room for other bits as well.
Yeah, exactly. So it makes room for other bits. That's right. Mm. Yeah.
Anyone well, to my very big surprise, I have the opposite experience.
Okay.
Yeah, it's quite familiar sense in me to feel scared.
Right.
But something in me feels scared. It becomes a numb, a knob somewhere in my body, which I want to get rid of.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, it's. I mean, it may not be the right words or the right.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah. There's no. It's not like a magic formula that works all the time. But exactly. Mm. Yeah. But the idea is someone's written here. It makes room for the compassion for the part.
Yeah. Sure.
But however we do that, I mean, this is just one suggestion, but.
Yeah,
particularly with parts of us that are scared. I mean, this is what happens around grief very typically. So I'll give you a little demo of this, just to kind of. So this is a kind of making space. So it's often when we feel scared, it feels like all of us. So I've got a little bear here. So when we say something in me feels scared, it's like we give it. It's not all of me. Something in me. It's like a movement, so we can keep company. Notice that part of me. Part of me really feels scared of feeling that grief. It's too big. We might hear what it's scared of or worried about. So that words or this gesture, this inner movement, something in me feels scared. I found so helpful in this process of working with, focusing generally and moving towards grief. So does that make sense with a visual too? We get a bit of this. So you can keep company and don't push past it. It's like, somebody said earlier in the comments, about wanting it to feel safe and have it witnessed. This is about, so yeah, that's kind of connects to this. Almost like some parts, it's like, well, I'm not letting you feel that sadness until we're safe, until we feel the right. And you know instinctively, also know, don't you? You know when you feel sad, and you often know who to speak to about it and who not to. That's the kind of knowing the body has, right? You think, oh, who should I talk to? And you think, well, not them, and not them, and not them. Oh yeah, they'll listen. That's a kind of knowing of something, some part of you is like, right, okay. They won't try and belittle me or make it go away. Or...
Something I've found with that is that it's, sometimes if I've waited for somebody else to be there with me, then that feeling is passed and I've squashed it down or something. So I don't wait for anybody to be with me now. I do it all on my own now. So this is good. Yeah. Well, I've learned to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I can see that it needs to be done in as a kind of communal thing. It'd be much better.
Yeah, great. Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you. Yeah. So we meet all sorts of parts. I mean, in focusing, if you're not familiar with it, I mean, there's lots of parts we meet, and especially in working with grief, and turning towards that, we meet parts of us that are angry, parts that are numb, parts that don't want to go there, parts that don't want to know. So they all need kind of opening to, welcoming in this process. It's not like, oh, there's grief and we'll just go there. Often you have to work or be friendly, be curious about other parts that are scared of feeling it. Um, And I think this, I'm still trying to get to the bottom of this, but I think there's also something, for those who are familiar with focusing and working with parts, I'll speak to that in you. I think grief can also be experienced by self, if that makes sense. It's like, it's not always a part of you that feels grief. You can feel grief, like all of you. So why am I saying that? I suppose you want to be true to what it is. Maybe that's the important thing to say here in this process. And focusing is about being about true to your experience. And sometimes we meet parts that are scared, parts that are worried. And sometimes, especially I think with grief, it's like, actually, it's not a part of me. It's all of me. All of me feels this. And we give space to that. Yeah. So I want to say a bit more about this topic, what the body knows. So we'll say a little bit about that, and we'll have time for questions around that. So this is, in a way, what the kind of heart of focusing, or one of the hearts of focusing, is you're tapping into what the body knows. And the body knows when we lose something, right? The body knows when something is missing. You know, and this is not just unique to humans, right? I was looking up this earlier about animals. How many animals grieve? You know, elephants, apes, cetaceans, horses, dogs, cats, apparently even birds. So animal, you know, I've no doubt that they experience some kind of grief. You know, they know when someone's not, you know, like you can imagine almost like a little bird or something in a nest. It's like mother bird hasn't come back, and they feel it, you know, very really in their body. They may not have thought, I don't know what it's like to be a bird, but you know, an organism knows when something is missing, right? It's very bodily. It's not conceptual at all. So I say that because it really touches into how grief isn't. It's grief is very bodily, and it's very much about knowing that our body has. You know, I have examples of this. You know, like say you're in a meeting and somebody doesn't come back after lunch or something, and you know someone's missing, and you're like, oh, somebody's missing. Who is it? But you feel it instinctively, intuitively. Something's missing. Somebody's missing. Who is that? So our body's very attuned to this kind of sense of presence of people or things, not just people, and when they're missing. So this is one of the things we tune into. You know, and even plants, I think, even plants have this kind of knowing. Plants know when the water is missing. You know, they kind of reach down with their roots to find new places, you know. I think for me, grief is something incredibly basic like that. I don't mean basic, like simple. I mean, like essential, almost. The sense of the body knowing something. Yeah. What about anticipatory grief? The person is still with you, but unwell. Yeah, well, we know that. There's a knowing and a whole thing we can tap into there and focusing. And certain kinds of illnesses have grief before, don't they? You know, like dementia and other things like that. It's like you lose a person before you lose a person. You know, I've not had that myself, but I've heard that from others. So yeah, it seems to me that grief is like an essential aspect of living. I don't even want to call it a feeling. I don't know, that makes it too small or something. It's an essential aspect of living, or like a river of experience that just weaves through our bodily life. So for me, that match is very watery. If you want to give it an element, if you're into things like that, for me, it's very watery. It's something that needs to flow. Yeah. And flowing, you know, anything that flows needs a container. So this is something I've been reflecting on a lot recently. The grief needs to flow, and it needs a container to flow into. Grief is not a problem to be fixed. You know, look at the things we talked about. Our general attitude in culture is, well, you can have it for a bit, but that's it. Then move on, you know.
Yeah. I'm not sure about the container thing, you know. Yeah, I don't think it needs a container. I think it needs to flow like a river.
Well, when I say a container, that's, I don't mean like a static container. I mean some kind of, like you can be the container for it, right?
I think you can be your own container for it.
Without a doubt. Thank you for saying that. Yeah. So the word container here isn't something like, oh, it needs to be bottled up and stuffed in a box. It's like a kind of walls or something. I don't know, the word container makes sense to me. But so some kind of place where it's met. And that could be you, or it could be someone else, or a community. Yeah. Sometimes it can be buried inside you for years before revealing itself. Maybe you weren't ready to feel it before. Exactly, yeah. For me, that's what focusing has been often about. It's like, oh, just sense into the body and then it feels safe enough. And suddenly it's like, oh, wow, I didn't even know I had that grief. It just boils to the surface. A safe place, exactly. A vessel. Other words for it, a vessel, a container. Yeah. I wanted to we'll come back to the container actually, although I should have put that a bit later in the seminar, but I want to talk about the different kinds of grief that Ruth alluded to, and I want to talk about this book. But I will pause just for a moment. Actually, any questions about what I've just said about grief as a kind of a flowing thing, and any comments or a container or
do you, when you're saying about grief being a flowing thing,
yeah,
do you, okay, there's two ways, which way? So one way I deal with it is that, so I'm feeling, oh, if this happened, this is how I would feel. Mm-hmm. And that feels awful. Mm-hmm. And then when I go, all right, where do I feel it in my body? Mm. Then it's a lot easier to bear. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing is the second way just avoiding it? Because then it's so much easier. Or is the first way, where you're focusing on the, if this happened, then this is how I would feel. Is that avoiding it? Mm. Because you're focusing on the content rather than the body.
Yeah. I think it's a bit of both. Like focusing as a practice invites you to not just notice the bodily feeling of grief, or give it space, but also what it's about. You know, grief is very particular. It's a particular. It can be, not always, but it's always about something, right? Our body doesn't feel random grief. It's grief about something. So I think there's a bit of room for both in the practice, how I understand it and do it. So we tune into it, we feel it in that bodily way, and it might make it easier, exactly. But then often there is a kind of quality of what it's about. Not always. Sometimes it's just like, I don't know where that grief was. Is it mine? Is it someone else's? Yeah. So that's just that may not answer your question, but it just comes in response, really. Neither of them necessarily avoidance, I suppose. They could be, yeah. But it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like you're giving them space. There's a message here. What's his name? I guess Francis Weller says we can't be our own grief container. And I think there's some truth in that, and there's some also, I'm not sure it's entirely true all the time. Because, well, I don't know. I think, you know, like we can cry on our own and it does feel different. And it can leave a wonderful, clear, calm space, I suppose. But having experienced grief in community sort of ritual, then that really was a clear space. Yeah. So back to that in a minute. But I don't think it's either or, but I think we tend to view it as something on our own.
Mm. Well, yeah. I would love to see it more in developing into a group being able to be a container, you know, safe.
Yeah.
Of course, everybody has the same, has grief as an experience, not in the same way, but, and if the group dynamic is safe, then, you know, you can carry it for each other and you can let somebody really be free.
Yeah, thank you. I get it. Really do. And we'll come back to that. Exactly. Okay. I want to touch on the five gates of grief because they really articulate something. So this is, from as far as I know, completely original material from Francis Weller. He's a psychotherapist and what he calls a soul activist. So he's been in the world of working with grief, you know, both individually and groups for, I don't know, many years, 30 years or something. And he's also drawing on the work of Maladoma Somes from the Dagara people in West Africa. So it's drawing on a kind of a living tradition of grief ceremony. So we'll come to that as well. But he comes up with these five gates of grief. So I'm going to just read them and then touch on each one. So the first gate, I like the way he calls them gates. I mean, they're really, gives a beautiful image of it. The first gate, everything we love, we will lose. Everything we love, we will lose. The second gate, the places that have not known love. I'll put this in the chat in a minute. The places that have not known love. The third gate, the sorrows of the world. The fourth gate, what we expected but did not receive. What we expected but did not receive. And the fifth gate, ancestral grief. And I was going to touch on each one. I'm just going to put those in the chat. So the first gate is the one we've most commonly been talking about, maybe the one in which you brought to this call, maybe even thought that was all it was about. Everything we love, we will lose. I mean, it's a pretty profound truth to contemplate. In his book, he talks about even your own death, and it's quite an amazing chapter in the book, talking about how it is to leave, you know, extraordinary. But yeah, that's a big thing. Everything we love, we will lose. And that really puts it very sort of beautifully and starkly. But then these four other gates, right? That's only one. The second gate, the places that have not known love. This is really touches something that focusing and many other methodologies, sort of therapeutic methodologies, point to, that there are parts of us that have never known love because they've never been welcomed by us or by our family or by, you know, we hide them away through shame or fear, even though they might be actually amazing, but they've not known love. You know, grief can be a place that's not known love, yeah. Or our joy or our fear or some aspect of us that was never welcomed. So we feel that missing. We feel the missing of parts of ourselves. So I love the way he puts that, of places that have not known love. So another big topic, you know, we could do, well, on the course I'll be doing, we'll be looking at these in much more detail. The places that have not known love. The third gate, the sorrows of the world. This is something I've been exploring a lot recently. And I'm feeling a lot, you know, what's happening in our world is, I can't put it into words. If I do, I'll start to feel it. You know, it's what's happening to our ecology, to our social system, to our climate, our oceans. You know, there's just, you know, it's huge, huge thing we feel, we each of us feel in some way. We may choose not to feel it, but I think we can, that's something that comes in our bodies, without a doubt. So this is the third gate. The fourth gate, what we expected but did not receive. This is another kind of missing that I was talking about earlier, a missing that focusing taps us into. It's extraordinary when you read this chapter in the book. It's like, what we expected but did not receive. What we expected was a village to receive us. What we expected was elders. What we expected was a relationship with the land. And what we expected was people to welcome us and be attuned to us. It's big. So that's a whole piece in itself. I mean, I'm sure you can feel it as we're talking about it, how what we're opening up here, yeah? What we expected but did not receive. And the last gate, ancestral grief. So yeah, this is the grief of the unspoken grief and pain of our ancestors and our ancestors' parents, grandparents, culturally. There's so much woundedness and grief and trauma that's sort of stuck and unspoken in our culture. Say our culture, my culture. From two world wars and even since then. Colonialism. And, you know, what happened with indigenous peoples, you know, it's flat, it's big, you know. So another big gate. So I've really kind of, I think it's amazing to welcome these hard in a way. Each one is a big gate, a big piece of experience to take in. But I wanted to bring them here because they've really affected me. Knowing that grief isn't just about losing someone. Grief, we feel all these other ones in one way or another. Maybe one really resonates with you right now, and that's you might be like, wow, I never knew that was a kind of grief. So it really articulates something very clear to me. So maybe, yeah, maybe just anyway, letting that sink in, and just any comments and responses about that, how that lands. Take your time to feel it, you know, don't rush to a response.
I was really struck, Peter. Hello, I was really struck by number four, really struck by that, because it's something you don't think about as in terms of what you were expecting. I really felt my heart being touched by the fact that, you know, as a sensitive soul, I was expecting to be received by people who were attuned to me, who welcomed me like elders, who were wise and knew what I needed. And I don't know, it just suddenly became this thing of, wow, that's very different what you actually get. And just the possibility of that being able to happen, it's just so remote somehow, it feels. But even feeling into it, you can sort of sense that feeling of, wow, what would that be like? Yeah. And just feeling really touched by that. Yeah.
Thanks, Aki. Thanks for sharing. Yeah. Yeah. Jen Lynn, the developer of Focusing, talks about being born of a blueprint. It's kind of a mechanical image in a way for such an organic process, but it fits in a way. It's a blueprint of knowing, like, what a human being needs, what a human being needs. And when we feel it, when we don't get it. Yeah.
I'm torn between thinking two things. On the one hand, yes, really feeling, oh, we weren't welcomed, didn't have a village, a support, blah, blah, all of that kind of stuff, and the ancestral stuff, and that making sense and being beautiful as well as making us feel grief. But then another part of me thinks, again, is this spiritual bypassing? Because it's a lot easier for me to go, all right, well, it's ancestral, so it's not about, I can distance myself from it and a bit potentially. And then is that just the idea that we can know? We're trying to find a, well, is it this? Isn't that part of it that we're grasping, trying to find an answer? What is it? Can I have a concept to put to this?
Oh, sure, yeah. No, that can happen. I get that.
And then it can take it away. Rather than for some stuff, no, this is it forever. Mm. Or is that a concept as well?
Yeah. And this is something that focusing really speaks to for me as a practice, because there's a knowing in the body that comes when you hear the truth, and it's like, no, that's not an idea. I actually feel that. That's not a concept. This is the truth, you know. This is the truth, but this is my truth, perhaps. But this is this body's truth. Maybe would be another way of putting it.
Mm.
So
thank you. Yeah. That's really helped.
Okay, great. There we go.
Really helped me. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I sometimes wonder about that. You know, the fact that I don't think you can think yourself into feeling.
No.
The thinking, you can't. In my experience, you can't think yourself into feeling.
No.
In my experience, you are. Yeah. They're two different things, aren't they? I know they're connected, but they are two different things.
Yeah, that's right. And you can't force yourself to feel any of these things.
No. Exactly. No.
But if they resonate, which I'm hoping they did when I read them. Out, it's like, all right, then it touches something in us, and that's your body going, yes,
yeah,
like, and that's what we could follow, that strand.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm gonna look at some of the other comments. Another source of violence, another source of pain. Yeah, I've got a look, there's a quote by that guy I talked to. Martin Prechtel. So modern people are not bad or lost. They are stuck in a blast furnace of banality, where all that technology and so-called advancement have been purchased at the price of losing the most basic of human prerogatives, the art of being deliciously out of control to grieve their dead. It is a terrible source of grief in itself not to be able to grieve. So, yeah. a terrible source of grief in itself not to be able to grieve. Not sure we can separate ourselves from ancestral experience exactly. We absorb it at some level. Exactly. And it's here with us now. Yeah. I mean, there's lots of studies around how this works physiologically through trauma and epigenetics, you know, how we carry the trauma. But you know, if you want to look at it more poetically, like that grief was, or the unprocessed grief that was in your grandfather that got handed to your father. And you as a child, even through your father, felt it, you know, feels it, your body kind of holds it some way, you know, and yeah.
So I can remember feeling my grandfather's grief around the wartime and the Jews, and I kind of used to cry as a child. Right. And so you can pick up other people's grief, do you know what I mean? Yeah. You know, pick up other people's stuff,
yeah. Definitely, yeah. And that's part of being human, is we're connected in that way, we're attuned, you know, I don't know anyone else, but I'm pretty sure I was the one that picked up the grief in the family, you know, and I was the one that held that, if you like. And you might have had that pole or not in your family story, but often it comes out, so it needs to come out somewhere.
Yeah.
Someone gets
it. Yeah.
Seeing any other comments. Places of unknown love. Yeah, great. Some things here. We need to trust our own bodies and not compare, exactly. I did a grief ceremony recently, and it was an in-person thing. Somebody stared just before we began. All of my grief's just gone away. They said, it's just, they're like shy animals. They're just gone, you know. And I really welcomed it. I said, okay, that's right. That's great. Well, it wasn't in a way, it wasn't great. But I can't remember exactly what I said, but it's like, that's really welcome not to feel it. You don't have to feel it. And it's very, our body needs to feel safe. You know, our body needs to feel like it can be held in that process. So maybe that will take us on to this next piece about containers. Does private grief flow too? Yeah, I think it does. But I think this extra piece of community grief, which I'm talking about in a minute, will add a bit more into it. So yeah, so grief needs, if you like, needs a container, it needs to be met. This is an amazing image in the book of why grief feels bottomless. This is before we meet it, grief can feel like, if I go into that pit, I'll never get out. You may not relate to this. Like, I'll never get out, that's too big. But it feels too big because it's never been met. It's never had a container. This is where Francis Weller puts it. And I'm like, yes, that's exactly it. It's like, until we really meet it, it feels enormous somehow. It's a really weird contradiction. Something in us thinks it's going to be bottomless and endless, but that's because it's never been met. It's never had an edge. A being, a person receiving it, and when it gets received, it can flow, and it knows its shape or something. So yeah, containers. So there's two kinds of container I want to talk about. One is, well, a focusing situation. Focusing on this practice. Often it's practiced in pairs. So somebody, you've got a human being there, they're not getting in the way, they're not interfering, they're not asking questions really, they're just listening to you and all your, how you are, and they are, that's a kind of container. And it can, and for me, very, very much has allowed grief to flow. Someone else, they don't have any judgment about what's happening generally, they're just very present to you, not like your own judgment about yourself, your focusing partner just listens, and it allows those parts of you who don't feel safe to feel a little bit safer and come into awareness. Yeah. So it's a kind of container. The two human beings together can be a container. And then the other lovely thing about focusing practice is it allows the uniqueness of grief. You know, grief isn't always even feeling sad. Like I said, it might be like, you might be angry, or you might be numb, or you might be relieved. You know, and who knows what's all the kind of textures of human experience around this are completely welcomed in focusing. There's no one saying you have to feel something, or you should feel this. You should be going through the five stages of grief, or giving you a map of it. It's just like you have your experience. You let your body show what's true. And if a partnership is set up well, which isn't difficult, if a partnership is set up well, that it's kind of, yeah, the uniqueness of your grief is welcomed. So that's one kind of container. And the second bit is about is this container of grief ceremony, which is really one of the thrusts of this book, is that grief needs community for it to really heal. And I think that's some very, I think that's true. We do have remnants of this, don't we, in our culture? We have the funeral. That's sort of, we think it's wrong when someone isn't, we don't mark the dead. You know, we have that. It's a very powerful remnant. Even if you, even if it's just one unknown, you give them a grave. You know, so it's, so I think that points to something profoundly important. But just the kind of surface of what's really needed, which is some kind of community space where grief is welcomed. So I'm going to paint a picture of a grief ceremony that I've been to, just give you a little flavour of it. So you might imagine like drumming and singing and maybe a group of, I don't know, 20, 30 people, 40 people or something. A kind of village of people who are welcoming to you. They're kind. You may not know them or you may know them, but it's a safe place. And there's, yeah, there's this kind of background song and rhythm. And then there's a place in this, in the space where you can offer your grief. It could be a, an altar or a place in nature or something. But in, within that kind of ceremony, there's a place where you offer, express in whatever way it comes, right? Every way it comes. It might be words. It might be moving. It might be nothing. It might be numbness. It might be silence. It might be sobbing like you've never sobbed before. And the drums are there and the singing is there. And there's somebody near you, somebody next to you. Maybe holding you or just standing next to you, keeping you company, bearing witness. And the village is bearing you witness also. So you've got somebody, you've got company, somebody with you, not too interfering, just right place for you. And then the whole village is kind of witnessing you. Maybe there are other people next to you also expressing. So you're witnessed, you're welcomed, you're held, and your grief is seen as a gift to the community. Your tears are not seen as something to be fixed or wrong. They're welcomed like rain or something. And you come back, you know, maybe you've finished your grieving, you come back to the village and people welcome you back. They're like, thank you for doing what you've done. Thank you for bringing that. And so that's a picture, a little glimpse, a picture of a grief ceremony that I've been to, maybe other people have experienced, I'm, I don't know. But
I think I just want to acknowledge that Jill here is really, really upset. And I just want to say, Jill, we're with you here, love.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, thank you.
We're with you,
yeah. Yeah, it's welcome. If it stirs something in you, it's very welcome. Thank you. Yeah. So it gives a picture of a grief, you know, I mean, this is my, I'm not saying I'm an expert on grief ceremony. I'm just still edging my way into it. But the few I've done have been very much in that flavor. That's from the Dogara tradition, more or less, this West African tradition. You know, you haven't, have you, in our own traditions we have keening and you have wakes, you know, so there are other kinds of ceremony that are still intact in some ways, but we're together. This is a really hugely important bit of it. So I just want to, any kind of response or questions from what I've just said, really, around ceremony and containers. And I'm seeing a comment here, maybe I'll just touch it. Modern funerals seem to become a celebration of life. Yeah, I think there's something, I've been to funerals like that, and I think there's a place for that too, isn't there? I think that's also probably quite a good addition to the process. So I would say definitely. I remember my stepmom said something interesting to me after my mum had died. She said, oh, after the funeral, it'll be better. And I think, even at the time, I thought, that isn't true. You know, it's like, so a funeral is one occasion can be expressed, but it took many years for that process to flow through me. And I attended it. I tried to tend to it and welcome it, but I didn't know this then. But I did know focusing, thankfully, so at least I could give it that. But it took many years, and it kind of doesn't go away in a funny way. It's still living in me in a different way it was. Yeah. Anyway, other responses. That's grief ceremony and containers. And any questions within this point, please just.
Hi. Thank you for what you said. I'm crying. I think I'm actually quite happy because the comment that you said about the grief that feels bottomless because it's never been felt just made me think, oh God, yeah, it's because I haven't. It's the one that I can't remember what number it is, but it's the one where you said the grief that you haven't had before. Oh. You're grieving what you haven't actually had.
That's right, yeah.
So it just made me think, okay, go and get it then.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks.
I think it's interesting as well that I've found with grief, there's also the other side of it is joy and laughter.
Yeah.
And I think that comes with it. It comes with it. I've often said, if I don't laugh, I'm going to cry. Or if I don't cry, I'm going to laugh. Because you get people that go to funerals, don't they? And they really start laughing.
Yeah.
And yeah, they do. They laugh like mad, don't they, at funerals? I've seen people laughing like mad at funerals. And people think that's terrible, but it's not. Because it's all the same thing. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
And I often find, you know, having a good belly laugh can be very similar to having a good cry.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. And, you know, that's very much my experience of grief ceremony was afterwards I felt relief and joy and like, wow, that was good to clear that out, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm just picking up on some other comments here. Could it feel some sort of pressure to express it if you went to somebody? Yeah, that is a thing that I'm noticing. That's because we're so unfamiliar with this practice, you know, I think. That it's like completely alien to us, so we might either kind of disconnect, like that one of, well, not say disconnect, but like all our grief goes shy because we feel like we have to perform or something, or I've got to come up with something, I've got to make it big and impressive, and so it was you know, I'm still learning how to hold these spaces in it, which is reviving a kind of lost tradition, let's say. That sounds grand, but something like that. So yeah, but I would say everything is welcome, just like in a focusing, how I would certainly lead anything like this. Everything's welcome. If you're not feeling it, that's fine. Just be as you are, you know. Trust your body. It may want to release, it may not. And it's, you know, some parts of us can get troubled and get like, come on, do something. We get many parts that come, go on. Everyone else is crying and you're not. But yeah, just like, and I've often had that. Actually, sometimes everyone's around me crying about something, and I'm like, I don't feel it at the moment. And then later on, it comes. You know, you can't predict the flow of these things, can you? But good question.
No, absolutely not. You can't. I think probably laughing and crying together is probably really, really healthy.
Yeah.
In my book, anyway.
Right. Thank you. Yeah, someone's come on here about Elizabeth. I've not read Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. I'm very aware of her work. Underneath a woman's tears, grief is rage. Yeah, I think rage is often around. I don't know which one's underneath what. Yeah. But they can be pretty close together. One of the things that comes through in working in the circles that I've done around sorrow for the world, and mainly that's what I've been focusing on, is kind of profound rage. You know, it's sort of, it's powerful when it comes. You know, it's like a visceral, so visceral. that's a kind of grief. Maybe it's a kind of grief, that rage. Yeah. Anything else? Questions? We've got a couple more minutes, and I'm going to. So I'll begin to wrap up.
I'll just say, I'm just taking in the description that you gave of the grief ceremony, and feel like, yeah, I'm just sort of taking it in really, but there just seems something so sort of sane about it. Yeah. Like, you know, just really, as opposed to, you know, what tends to happen in, you know, in my community here, it's just all kept quite kind of quiet, and that to have such a like really explicitly receptive space, and you said it's grief is and tears are seen as a gift to the community, and tears could be a gift like rain, you know, like somehow it's the sane and healthy thing to do to have this space, and I can really see how that would kind of work so well and feel that there's a just like a kind of rightness to it in a way.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I know, it's very much how it's seen in that culture, not like an option. And it's like it's good for the health of the village. You know, this is done every week or every month. It just keeps life alive and flowing and joy flowing. And it's like essential, you know. So, really interesting. Okay, great. So I want to say a little bit about a kind of, I guess following up. Maybe this has stirred something in you that you want to follow up. Please, I'll send out a link to this. I'll send out the name of the book, The Wild Edge of Sorrow, because you want it sooner, by Frances Weller. Beautiful book, very easy to read, accessible. Kind of book that needs digesting over time, but still, you can just. It's not like heavy academic. It's very human. And there's lots of talks by him online. There's a lovely interview with him and Charles Eisenstein. If you know Charles Eisenstein, you may know of him. He has a blog and he did an interview with Frances Weller. So I'll make a note to send that out too. Let me just send a link to that. It's a lovely interview. Okay, and so I'm going to be offering a course in September the 24th or 23rd, 5 Monday evenings. It's called The Landscapes of Grief. It's for people who know focusing already. I would love it to be open, but to broader, but because we'll be practicing and we'll be going into focusing partnerships, you'll need to kind of know those basics in place to get there. And maybe I'll do other courses later, more open. But for now, anyway, so those who know focusing a little bit, anyway, basics, that's all you need to know. But we'll be exploring these five gates in much more detail, not just as a theory, but experientially, you know, just kind of what happens when we take them in our body, and giving space to speaking about it. You know, these are things most people don't ever get to speak about. Just be listened to, you know, experientially. It'll be a lot of focusing time. Just taking in some of these concepts. We'll probably do some kind of ceremony, even though it's online. We'll work something out where that can be welcomed. So that's 5 weeks starting on Mondays, and there's an early bird rate coming to a close at the end of the month. I will send details about that out as well, because it's not in my brain right now. But if you do want, and also in September, I'm doing an intro to focusing course. So if you're new to it, and want to learn just the basics, also that's happening the same, in fact starting the same week, so you could also do that. Maybe just to kind of be curious, welcome. See grief is something not to be fixed, but welcomed. Find a safe place for it. You know, often people talk about going out into nature, very non-judgmental. Go to the woods and give it some space out there. That's another place we can take it. So one more comment, just read it, so maybe. Definitely. There's no such thing as a good grief. We don't want to get in comparing. Your process is your process, you know, very much so. So thank you for joining me. It's been really, I'm really grateful to have the opportunity to share something I'm passionate about, and thanks for your questions and comments. Please feel free to get in touch afterwards if you've got a question. Send it through by email. I think that's us for today, really. If there's any last minute pieces. Okay, good. So feel free to unmute yourself and say goodbye.
See ya. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.